History has revision at your fingertips.
American withdrawal in Vietnam was the result of both a failure of military and political will. US intervention to support the South Vietnamese regime was a flawed strategy, and, as the casualties mounted, the will and justification for American presence in Indochina became more and more untenable. This podcast will have a look at Vietnam and how the Americans failed to achieve their objectives. We will identify many of the problems that they experienced on the ground and the strength of the opposition that there was to them. Having identified the problems the American military had, we'll then move on and have a look at the problems American presidents had at home to justify the war and then the difficulties in pulling out of it. In the late 60s and early 1970s, Vietnam had become the dividing issue between different groups within America. It was these divisions which ultimately made American policy in Vietnam impossible to justify and impossible to sustain. In the 1960s, you probably couldn't imagine a country so diametrically opposed to what the United States was like than Vietnam. Most Vietnamese were peasants living on the irrigated floodplains of the Great Red and Mekong Rivers. It was a peasant society in which rice was the staple food, and few modern comforts were available. Very few roads were paved, very few homes had electricity. It was this simple collectivist lifestyle which made the Vietnamese people more prone to supporting communism than any ideas of what America's described as progress. Americans being sent to Vietnam to help the people may as well have gone to a different planet. America were also keen to support the regimes from Saigon. This wasn't a good idea. After Diem, a series of corrupt military dictatorships took over. The presence of Americans and their wealth made divisions in society even more extreme. Added to this was the problem of internal refugees, displaced from their homes because of the fighting. Refugees flooded into Saigon and other major cities, making conditions living there even worse for the population. The presence of American troops made things even worse. A dollar economy was established which completely disrupted the old South Vietnamese economy. Public services broke down as workers chased the dollar instead of carrying out their duties. In spite of this, America did make some attempts in its nation-building programs. But these all fell very flat. It seemed that the black market and corruption and bribery meant that the poor continued to suffer. The hearts and minds were not being won, and as a result, support for the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese grew, the more the Americans increased their presence in Vietnam. Another major problem for the Americans was they had to rely on the support of the ARVN, the Army of the Republic of Vietnam. This was notorious for its chaos and corruption. Most of the senior commanders were actually political appointees. It was under-equipped and divided. The ARVN also terrorized local communities. The American military put little faith in the ARVN and as a result relegated them to supporting roles. This in turn made the army even more demoralized and unable to fulfill its role. To make matters worse, the ARVN and the Americans were up against a formidable enemy, the Viet Cong, and their supporters in North Vietnam. The communists knew they couldn't defeat the Americans in a pitched battle. The way to beat the Americans was to break their will. The Viet Cong worked hard to win over the hearts and minds of the Vietnamese villagers. They promised land reform, which the peasants wanted, and also followed Mao's army code, which meant that they treated villagers with respect. This is in marked contrast to the Americans and ARVN. They were also not afraid to use terror when necessary. The communists benefited from strong political and military leadership, from Ho Chi Minh himself up to his death in 1969, and from General Giap, the hero of Dien Bien Phu in 1954. The strategy was for the Viet Cong to fight a guerrilla war against Americans and wear them down. The North Vietnamese army would fight pitched battles if they were strong enough to do so. Villagers supporting the VC were able to shield, shelter and feed them, in spite of the danger of reprisals. Viet Cong troops showed incredible hardiness and great heroism. They were inspired not just by communism, but also by nationalism, removing foreign occupation from Vietnamese soil. Hardships included no change of uniform, skin diseases, and other dangerous infections such as malaria. But this increased the resilience and patience of the Viet Cong when it came to actually fighting and suffering casualties. Supplies to the communists in South Vietnam came from the Soviet Union, China, and other parts of the communist bloc. The Ho Chi Minh Trail then provided access between the north and the south. The trail was vital to the war effort and moved through Laos and Cambodia. It sent supplies south and moved the wounded north. Bicycles and porters were key means of transport. The porters suffered great hardship and 10% of them died. These men could carry 55 pounds of rice or 40 pounds of other equipment 15 miles in the day or 12 miles overnight. The trail was widened in 1964 to accommodate some vehicles. It wasn't just a single route from north to south, but relied on different branches which could be kept open even when some parts were bombed and in need of repair. Along the trail were repair workshops, depots, hospitals and rest camps. The trail was well camouflaged by the Vietnamese jungle. The American bombing campaign failed to stop the trail being used in spite of advanced technology to clear away the foliage in order to identify it better. In the south, the communists established a complex system of tunnels and networks under the noses of the Saigon government. This maze of tunnels provided shelter, storage, and the opportunity to disappear. Booby traps ensured that the enemy couldn't infiltrate them at will. American tactics against the North and against the Viet Cong did not either break their will to continue fighting or their capacity to inflict damage on the Americans. To illustrate the sacrifice that the North Vietnamese and Viet Cong were willing to endure in order to defeat the Americans, we can look at the Battle of Yad Drang that took place in 1965 over 34 days. America lost 305 troops. The North Vietnamese Army lost 3,561. Both sides claimed victory, but the Americans were much less capable of supporting that level of casualties than the NVA were of sustaining 10 times as many. In spite of having over 500,000 men at his disposal, General William Westmoreland, the leader of the United States Army in Vietnam, failed to achieve the breakthroughs he needed. Indeed, American policy and tactics served to actually bring more and more Vietnamese support for their enemies. For example, search and destroy missions served to alienate the local peasant communities. The idea was to identify communist bases and eliminate them, but who was communist, who wasn't? It seemed that the Americans didn't know and sometimes didn't seem to care. The Americans also hoped that their aerial bombardment, Operation Rolling Thunder, would serve to bring the North Vietnamese to the negotiating table or to surrender. The reality was very different. Although more bombs were dropped on Vietnam than in the entire Second World War, it still didn't break the resolve of the enemy. Using bombs, rockets, napalm, defoliants, they still failed to shut down the Ho Chi Minh Trail or stop the North's capacity for fighting against them. In Hanoi and other cities in North Vietnam, complex systems of shelters and warning systems made the impact of US airstrikes minimal. Shock brigades were employed to actually repair the damage almost as soon as it had happened. The American tactic of using helicopters also didn't serve its purpose as well. Burying the troops into and out of the battle zones, it detached the Americans from the people they were meant to be fighting for. It seemed like they were coming in, doing a job, and getting out, and almost immediately, the Viet Cong would regain the territory. One of the most controversial actions taken by America was in Operation Ranch Hand, where they used chemical warfare to strip the Viet Cong of their jungle cover. Defoliants like Agent Orange killed over 3 million acres of vegetation. Little at the time was known about the long-term effects of using things like Agent Orange, but they would have devastating consequences on future generations of Vietnamese children. Actions like these continue to make the Americans out to be the bad guys, fighting for a corrupt regime against a group of people who they had little or no understanding of. In the 1960s, 11 million American men joined the armed services, of whom about a fifth were actually drafted, the rest conscripted. When asked why they wanted to sign up, many said they wanted to be like John Wayne, they wanted to be a hero. Some said they wanted to fly helicopters, others said they just liked the idea of killing people. The average age of the American GI serving in Vietnam was 19. This compares to 26 in World War II. These were boys rather than men, and many had little experience beyond their own school days. Soldiers served a tour of duty of 365 days, it was 13 months if you joined the Marines. This led to a lack of esprit de corps within the US Army. The guys were waiting until they could go home again, rather than fighting for each other. There was discord between the officers and the men. Many of the officers were actually younger than the people and with less experience at the front line than the people they were meant to be serving. It was not uncommon for bounties to be put on the heads of the serving officers, and many were actually killed in action by their own side. There was also concern that a disproportionate number of black soldiers were serving in frontline units, and therefore the body count was higher. Fighting in the jungles of Vietnam was very different from being back home. A lot couldn't cope with the heat and the humidity, and the jungle environment was very different from being in Kansas. The nature of the fighting and the fear of ambush and the uncertainty about who was VC and who was civilian made matters even worse for the American soldiers. Cultural misunderstandings between the American troops and the Vietnamese people were exacerbated by the fact that when the troops weren't actually serving on the front line, their life was made as American as possible. In the post exchanges, they could buy pretty much any American goods. In the barracks, they had cinemas, basketball courts, bowling alleys, things to remind them of home. It was air conditioned. They could have beer and Coca-Cola. It seemed a long way away from being in the jungle. Many troops couldn't resolve the contrast between their life on the front line and their life beyond it. Many turned to drugs or to prostitutes. The priority for many was to serve their tour of duty and to get home. This is in marked contrast to those fighting on the other side, who were battle-hardened, used to a tough life. Another problem was that many American servicemen simply didn't understand what they were fighting for, and when they came back home, they found that people didn't approve of what they had been doing. In February 1968, the National Liberation Front, the Viet Cong, and elements of the North Vietnamese Army launched the Tet Offensive to coincide with the Vietnamese New Year. This was a crucial blow to America's position in Vietnam. Although militarily, it was a heavy defeat for the communists against the Americans. Within 3 days, they were forced back. It was the shock of the Tet Offensive, the fact that American compounds and the embassy itself had been attacked, made people think that this war had become an unwinnable situation. The Tet Offensive had a significantly demoralizing effect on the American public and even on the American president himself. Another crucial propaganda blow to the United States took place in May 1968, though it hadn't become public until November 1969. This was the attack and the massacre which took place at the village of My Lai. Between 200 and 500 Vietnamese civilians, including women and children, were massacred by American soldiers. The American troops were frustrated at being unable to locate their enemy, and they suspected the villagers of My Lai to be sheltering Viet Cong guerrillas. Even though no evidence could be found of VC activity, the soldiers went berserk and slaughtered the villagers. The soldiers were generally new recruits whose average age was 19. One spoke of how he'd lost his mind and obeyed orders to kill, cutting throats and scalping over 25 people. The officer giving the orders was a man called Lieutenant William Calley. The incident was reported by one of the helicopter pilots, but the army tried to keep it secret and covered it up. They announced there'd been a battle at My Lai and awarded the soldiers involved medals. It was only a year later, when a true account of the event was leaked to the public, including photos of the victims, that it caused widespread revulsion throughout the United States and the wider world. Calley was found guilty and sentenced to 3 years in prison. This is only one example of the atrocities that the Americans committed, but it served to show people that Americans were not fighting in the best interests of the Vietnamese people. As the war went on, and as the death count rose, and as the atrocities became more and more known, there was a rise of resistance to the Vietnam War within the United States. Those in favor of the war very quickly labeled those opposing the war as campus bums and hippies. But the anti-war movement went much deeper than this. Growing resistance was the result of a variety of factors. It seemed that the war was becoming unwinnable, especially after the Tet Offensive in '68. Also, many started to question what were the motives behind America's involvement. The Cold War didn't seem to be as pressing after the Cuban Missile Crisis, so why the big push against communism in Vietnam, especially in support of a corrupt military dictatorship in the South? There is also concern about the use of chemical weapons and other tactics which seem to lead to indiscriminate killings. The media played a crucial role in showing people what the reality was like of what was happening in Vietnam. They showed people dying, and in particular American troops coming home in body bags. As the level of casualties of Americans grew, so did opposition to the war. Also, we see many returning veterans from the war came back and complained about what they saw as an unjust and needless war. The war also came at the time when President Johnson was trying to establish the Great Society, a series of welfare reforms to help the very poorest people in American society. Money being spent on the war should have gone to be helping the poorest in society. It was also the time of the civil rights movement. Many blacks saw this as an imperialistic war carried out by old white men, where the blacks were the ones who were suffering on the front line. It was on America's campuses that the anti-war protests were at their most vocal. "Hey, hey, LBJ, how many kids did you kill today?" was a common chant at the teach-ins and sit-ins organized at American universities. As the level of protest rose and it went beyond the campuses, then it was met with a violent reaction by the authorities. In 1970, this culminated in the shooting of 4 students at Kent State University by National Guardsmen. Vietnam was creating deep rifts in American society, and American presidents couldn't help but be wary and concerned about what was happening. One of the most striking features of anti-war protests was the draft resistance movement. The draft was conscription, which had existed in the United States since the Second World War. Because America's population had grown, it meant that not everyone needed to actually sign up for the army. There was an elaborate series of exemptions, for example, for college students. These favored wealthy, white, middle-class Americans, and as a result, it was the working classes and the black populations who became the cannon fodder who'd end up going to war. The draft resistance movement was established to help young people who'd been called up and prevent them from joining the army through finding exemptions. Others chose to simply burn their draft papers. This led to a great deal of opposition within the United States, particularly from veterans who saw this as disloyal to the country. In total, about 250,000 Americans avoided the draft. Johnson had been the president responsible for escalating the Vietnam conflict. And now, in 1968, he felt that the war was becoming unwinnable. In March, a month after the Tet Offensive, he announced to the public that he would not stand again for the presidency. This followed the earlier resignation of some of his key advisors, like Robert McNamara, who saw the war now as unwinnable and that some exit strategy needed to be arranged. Following this decision, the Democrat Party followed a policy of seeking to limit America's commitments in Vietnam. They were up against Richard Nixon, who promised to end the war and to win the peace. Nixon established a policy of Vietnamization. The aim was to hand over the fighting of the communists to the South Vietnamese. The aim was to extricate America from Vietnam without being seen as having lost Vietnam to communism. Secret peace negotiations had begun under President Johnson in March 1968, but under Nixon and his National Security Advisor Henry Kissinger, these took on a greater urgency. Nixon's approach sought to put pressure on North Vietnam into ending the war. He sought to try and isolate the North Vietnamese by getting on better with the Soviet Union and Communist China. He stepped up the bombing campaign against North Vietnam and extended the bombing into Cambodia in 1970. But most importantly, between 1969 and 1971, he made almost 400,000 American troops return home. In 1972, a major North Vietnamese offensive against the South failed, and Nixon then tried to delay things because there was an election on and he didn't want to be seen as giving in to North Vietnam too much. After the election, he launched a Christmas bombing campaign against Hanoi, and that forced the North Vietnamese to finally come to an agreement with the United States. In January 1973, the Paris Peace Agreement brought about an immediate ceasefire. Prisoners of war would be released, American forces and bases would be withdrawn, all missing in action would be accounted for, and the South Vietnamese would be given independence. On the 29th of March 1973, the last American troops left Vietnam. Now it was down to South Vietnam to defend itself against the communist forces of the North and the Viet Cong. Nixon described the settlement of 1973 as peace with honor, but South Vietnam was only just to last a little bit longer than he did. In spite of American training and technology, South Vietnam was no more than an army without a country. American money to South Vietnam dried up as Congress saw it as a waste. The South Vietnamese regime was still corrupt and still lacked the support of the majority of the population. The survival of South Vietnam became only a matter of time. In December 1974, North Vietnam launched a major military offensive against the South. Finally, in April 1975, the capital, Saigon, fell to the communist forces. One of the bleakest symbols of American failure in Vietnam was the televised news images of desperate Vietnamese men, women and children trying to clamber on board American helicopters taking off from the US embassy. All around them, the communist forces swarmed through Saigon. America's 30-year bid to contain communism in Southeast Asia had failed. So, why had the United States of America failed to defeat communism in Vietnam? To the military, they believe it was a failure of political will. It was a succession of governments who escalated the war too slowly, and then the government showed a lack of resolve when it needed it in 1968 to 1970. The military also blamed the media for its portrayal of the war in showing American brutality against the innocent Vietnamese civilians. The military argued they were stabbed in the back by weak, spineless politicians. The politicians would argue that Vietnam was lost because of a military failure. Quite frankly, the Americans' tactics didn't work. Bombing didn't work. Defoliation didn't work. Search and destroy didn't work. It only served to alienate the people they were meant to be protecting. It is this which is most important. America simply failed to understand the context of Vietnam. They saw it as a battle between communism and capitalism, between Moscow and Washington, and didn't understand the complexities of the Vietnamese desire for independence. America's key failure was the failure to establish a credible government in South Vietnam, which could actually become a model of capitalism and democracy and serve the interests and needs of the Vietnamese people. Unable to achieve this, they played into the hands of a formidable opposition. Goodbye and good luck.